It feels a little awkward that I'm up here giving an intro, but thank you for coming to our second speaker this year from the Medical Ethics Society. We want to thank Roshefta for coming here and speaking for our club on the topic of bicarbolin, which is something that's very practical, both for someone who wants a future in medical ethics and medicine, or just an average person every single day. We could be doing more to help people who are sick and who are in need of refuah. And we want to thank Roshefta again for coming. And yes.
Thank you. Thank you all for being here. It's a pleasure. I know that this was supposed to take place a few weeks ago. Unfortunately, I got COVID a few weeks ago and was stuck in bed with fever and couldn't leave my bedroom. So thank you for rescheduling and for allowing me the opportunity to talk about something which is very dear to my heart. As a Rav in a community, so often you're given the opportunity to be involved in the mitzvah of bicarbolin. I'm happy that I was just called an average person. If you're not in the medical field, the average person is also able to do bicarbolin. So I'm happy to hear that I, too, am part of the average. And anyone who considers themselves part of the common folk like me also will have the opportunity to be participating in this great mitzvah of bicarbolin throughout the course of your lives. And living in a community gives you the opportunity to do so all the time in many different ways. What's making noise? No, my... No, I'm like, something's buzzing right here. It's like a speaker, I think. Okay, so let's begin. The first question we need to ask ourselves anytime we deal with any mitzvah in the Torah is this a mitzvah midoraisa? Is it a mitzvah midorabanan? Is this something that we find mentioned in the Torah itself, or is it something that came along later on in history? What's fascinating about the mitzvah bicarbolin is you look through the Gemara and you find a number of different sources that are mentioned for the mitzvah of bicarbolin. Number one, we have in Parshas Yisro, where Moshe Rabbeinu is leading the Jewish people by himself. Yisro turns to his son-in-law and he says, listen, I very much admire your contribution, I admire your commitment to the Jewish people, but you need to have other people who are going to help and assist you in the leadership of the community. And he tells him the following: you should have others who you will put in positions of leadership, and then through this whole body of leadership that you will construct, you will then have the ability to advise the Jewish people how to observe the Torah and mitzvos, and you will teach them the way that they should walk, and the mitzvos that they should do. Now, the Gemara in Bava Metzia, Daf Lamed, finds this to be a very curious phrase. What does it mean, haderech yelchu ba? How are they supposed to walk? What path are you referring to? So the Gemara says that when it says the word yelchu, it's a reference to bicarbolin. Because usually you have to walk to go do the mitzvah of bicarbolin. Usually the chol is not going to be in your house. So what it says is you should advise the Jewish community how to observe the mitzvah of bicarbolin. And that is what Yisro meant when he told Moshe Rabbeinu that he should instruct and teach the Jewish people all about the details of the mitzvah of bicarbolin. Some have pointed out that perhaps we learn from here that it's important that when you're mevaker chole, you also have to remember when it's time to go. Haderech yelchu ba. Sometimes it's not appropriate to stay by the chole for so long. If you've ever been Menachem Avil, sometimes I find the same kind of sentiment. You have somebody you're visiting, and you watch as one of the people who's there trying to help console the mourner, and of course they're all well-meaning, but you overstay your welcome. And you are no longer welcome by the Avil. They would much rather have a few minutes of peace and quiet, and they've heard enough from you, or they don't want to talk anymore. And you always have to gauge the person who you're trying to do the chesed for, the Avil or the chole or whoever it may be. Is this a time where it would be appropriate to say yelchuba, where it's time to leave? In fact, when the Rambam in Perek Yudal HaLach Avav talks about the mitzvah of bicarbolin, he writes the following: Mevakesh alav rachamim v'yotze. After doing the mitzvah of bicarbolin, he says v'yotze. You leave. What do you mean you leave? It's a very strange formulation. The Rambam doesn't write after you shake lulav, you put it down and you walk back to your house. He doesn't say after you daven in shul, you should then leave. Because you can stay in shul as long as you'd like, and you can shake the lulav and esrog as much as you want. But over here, when it comes to the mitzvah of bicarbolin, some say part of the structure, part of the essence of the mitzvah is knowing when it's appropriate to leave. And that's why the Rambam puts this into the definition of the mitzvah, and he says, V'yotze, there is a time when sometimes you need to walk away, you need to leave, and you need to know when it's no longer appropriate to be there. So that is the first reference that we find to the mitzvah of Bikur Cholam. It's the Gemara Maseches Bava Metzia. The Gemara Maseches Nedarim has another pasuk from Sefer Bamidbar, a pasuk that probably most of us are not familiar with. In Kemos Kal Adam Yemusun Eila Ufkudas Kal Adam. And from here the Gemara says we learn that there's a mitzvah of Bikur Cholam when somebody's sick. We should go visit them. The Gemara has a Maseches Sota Daf Yud Dalid, another source that we learn that we should follow in the footsteps of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Acharei Hashem Elokecha Teleichun. And says the Gemara, just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Mevakar Chole, as we find, he visits Avraham Avinu after he performs the Bris Milah, he was not feeling well. Therefore, we should follow in the footsteps of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and do the same. So we have a conglomerate, we have a number of different sources that we find throughout the Gemara and throughout Chazal, of where we know that there is this mitzvah of Bikur Cholam. What's fascinating is, if you look in the Rambam refers to the mitzvah of Bikur Cholam as a mitzvah saseh shel divrehem. What does that mean? That sounds like it's a mitzvah midrabanan, which is very curious, because here we just quoted a number of psukim in Chumash itself, where we have the idea of Bikur Cholam that is alluded to. So how does the Rambam come to that conclusion that it is only a mitzvah saseh shel divrehem? Leaving that point aside, in the end of the phrase of the Rambam, he says, even though this is only a mitzvah saseh shel divrehem, the truth is, he says, these are all subsumed under the general category of ve'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. If I'm sick, I appreciate when people check up on me, when people come visit me. That means, if I really appreciate someone else, I should do the same for them. That's part of ve'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. So the Ramban points out that this Rambam is very confusing. On the one hand, the Rambam says it's a mitzvah saseh shel divrehem, which means it's only derabbanan. Then he tells us it's under the category of ve'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. But the truth is, the Rambam ignores all three of the sources that we quoted in the Gemara itself. Why does he not mention those? So, it's a very interesting question. It turns out to be a machlokas harishonim whether the mitzvah of Bikur Cholam is a mitzvah midaraisa or a mitzvah midarabbanan. Be it as it may, whatever the nature of the mitzvah is, we do have a mitzvah of Bikur Cholam. And we know that any time we observe a mitzvah, whether it's a mitzvah midaraisa or a mitzvah midarabbanan, we make a bracha. That is what we do. As the Gemara says in Maseches Pesachim, Kol HaMitzvos Kulon Mevarech Aleihem Over La'Asiyasan. Before observing or performing any mitzvah, we recite a bracha. So you ever wonder, why is it before we walk into the room of a patient, why don't we make a bracha? Asher Kedushanu B'Mitzvos HaVitzivanu Al Mitzvos Bikur Cholam. Wouldn't that be appropriate? Why should it be any different than any other mitzvah that we do? Al Bi'er Chametz. Leishe Basukah. I'll make her Megillah. Everything throughout the year. And you'll say, maybe it's only Midrabanan, and that's why we don't make a bracha. But that can't be the answer, because we're about to observe Hanukkah, and we know we make a bracha on Neiros Hanukkah, which clearly is only Midrabanan. We make many brachos on mitzvahs Midrabanan. So why would it be that this is an exception to the rule? Why is there no bracha when we observe the mitzvah of Bikur Cholam? This is subject to a major, major dispute among the Rishonim. The Rashba in the Tshuva argues that perhaps the reason why is because the only time I would recite a bracha on a mitzvah is when I am definitely going to be able to observe it. However, he says, what happens if I get myself ready, I prepare everything to go visit a chole, then I show up to the house and there's a sign on the door that says, you know, right now we can't take visitors. So I stood outside and I had all the kavana and I'm sitting with my sitter and I'm saying the bracha, and then I walk into the house and they say, right now it's not an appropriate time. So, says the Rashba, it wouldn't make sense to recite a bracha on a mitzvah that can so easily disintegrate, that can so easily be irrelevant. No longer is the mitzvah of Bikur Cholam relevant to me if the chola explicitly says he doesn't want me to be there. And therefore we would assume, says the Rashba, that I would not make a bracha on the mitzvah of Bikur Cholam. Similarly, he writes, this is why every time I do the mitzvah of Kibud Avaim, I do not recite a bracha either. Ask the Rashba why. It's a mitzvah midaraisa, you're observing the mitzvah of I'm not sure what's with this chair, but okay. So, is there a normal chair here, perhaps? Maybe there's one in another classroom. Why do I not recite a bracha? So, the Rashba says, the reason why is because my parents at any given time can say, thank you so much for making me a coffee, but I'm not interested in a coffee. Or like everybody said today, I don't want pizza because I just ate meat. So, this happens, and therefore the whole mitzvah of Kibud Avaim is no longer relevant. So how can you make a bracha if 5 minutes later it could turn out that the bracha that you made is really not relevant at all to the mitzvah that you did? Now, a very interesting test case would be, not something that I want to focus on, but something just to think about. When we come to the mitzvah of Kiddushin, a husband and wife get married, they're observing the mitzvah of getting married. That is a very special mitzvah. The Rambam says, before you do the mitzvah of Kiddushin, you make a bracha. And the Ravid says, how can you make a bracha before you do the Kiddushin? Maybe the husband is about to say, Hariat Mekudeshesli, and the wife is going to say, you know, I don't know, not so excited about you. Let's hold off on this wedding. Thank you so much. I'm not so excited about you. Let's maybe not have this wedding go through right now. Well, what happens? Then it will turn out that was a bracha levatela. So says the Ravid, what should you do when you're performing, when you're observing the mitzvah of Kiddushin? The Ravid says, since you don't have the ability to make the bracha beforehand, because you're not sure whether or not the girl is going to agree, thank you so much, so maybe you should make the bracha afterward, right? Even though the general rule is that we make brachas before we do a mitzvah, here, says the Ravid, there is no option. You can make the bracha before you do the mitzvah because maybe the mitzvah is not going to come to fruition. And therefore, the Ravid says, in this case, by Kiddushin, you make a bracha afterward. That is the machlokas, the Rambam and the Ravid. So according to the Ravid, that by Kiddushin you make a bracha after, then we should do the same thing by all of these examples. We should make a bracha after you leave the bedside of the chole, and they have very much appreciated the mitzvah that you've just done. Since you have no option to make it before because the chole might always say they don't want you to visit, well then why don't we make the bracha afterward as the Ravid suggests by Kiddushin? That is a very strong question. Again, I don't want to focus on it because there's so many other things to talk about, but I think it's just a very thought-provoking issue to consider. But this is all within the opinion of the Rashba as to why it is that we don't recite a bracha on the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. The Rashba says the reason why is because it's very possible and it's very probable that the mitzvah can become irrelevant and therefore your bracha would become a bracha levatala. Other Rishonim say, perhaps the reason why we don't make a bracha is because Ein modim al hakalkolos. What are you going to say? Thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm so grateful that I have the opportunity to do the mitzvah Bikur Cholim. I'm so happy that this person is sick in the hospital, and I'm grateful to you that you gave me the opportunity to come visit them. I would be much happier if nobody was sick, if there was nobody to visit. I wish all of you a lot of success and luck that you should be able to save a lot of patients' lives and you should be able to enhance the lives of those who need your help. But it would be even nicer if we didn't need doctors, if nobody got sick, correct? So, says the Ravid, that we don't make a bracha on a mitzvah which is really a kilkel, on something which is a terrible thing. For example, he says, do I make a bracha on giving tzedakah? Well, tzedakah is a wonderful mitzvah, but we don't make a bracha on tzedakah. Why not? For the same reason. We don't make a bracha on giving tzedakah because it's very sad that somebody, unfortunately, needs my handout. So I'm happy that HaKadosh Baruch Hu entrusted me with the money and wants me to help other people out. But when you think about it, does it really make sense to make a bracha on tzedakah when, after all, I'm thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu that somebody else has a terrible situation where they need me to help them? That's not something to be grateful for. And therefore, the Ravid said, this is why we do not recite a bracha. Other Rishonim say, perhaps the reason we don't say a bracha on the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim is because it would not make sense to make a bracha on any mitzvah unless this is something that is unique to the Jewish people. But if this is something that is a mitzvah sichli, something that societal norms dictate that this is what you do, then what distinguishes me as a Jew by what I'm doing? So I say, Asher Kedushanu b'mitzvosa b'tzivanu. Before I shake lulav, I make that bracha. There is no one else in the world who's shaking lulav. It's clear and obvious that the only reason why I'm doing this is because Kedushanu b'mitzvosa b'tzivanu. It's because God commanded me to do so. When I'm going to be mevaker chole, I don't know, I think it would be a societal expectation that if I have a good friend who's not feeling well, I'll go visit them. And it's not clear and obvious from what I'm doing that the only reason I'm doing this is because vitzivanu kiddushanu mitzvosav. That's not a given. And therefore he says, when I have a mitzvah sichlius, this would not be something that would require a bracha. So that is a synopsis of some of the reasons why we do not recite a bracha on the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. But in general, we have to ask ourselves, what exactly is the fundamental underpinning of the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim? What is the objective? Why do we have such a focus on the mitzvah Bikur Cholim? Say it's Daraisa, say it's Darabanan, you recite a bracha, you don't recite a bracha. We got past all of that, but what am I trying to accomplish when I do the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim? And I think particularly this question needs to be asked to those who are actually going into the field of medicine. Because you may not realize that every time you treat a patient, you are actually potentially engaging in the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. So the Tur writes as follows. Listen to the words of the Tur in Siman Shin Lamed Hei. Mitzvah gedola hi levaker. There is a great mitzvah to go and visit the one who is sick. Shemitoch kach, says the Tur. Why is there a great mitzvah to visit the person who is sick? Because by doing so, yivakesh alav rachamim. Says the Tur, by visiting the sick, it will lead you to have an opportunity to ask for mercy from HaKadosh Baruch Hu on behalf of this patient. Fascinating. What does that have to do with anything? Then he continues, V'nimtza ki'ila mechayo oso. V'gam, and also, mitoch she'ro'ehu, if you're going to visit the patient, ma'ayin bi'inyano im yitztarach l'shem davar. While you're there, you'll be able to ask, did you have a good meal? You'll ask him whether or not the sheets have been cleaned. You'll ask whether or not they need a change of clothing. Do you need something to drink? Are you comfortable? Should I move the bed for you? Do you need something to do? So says the Tur, but that's only secondary. The most primary focus that the Tur puts on the mitzvah bikur cholim is, if I go visit the chola, I'll have the opportunity to offer a tefillah on their behalf. How amazing is that? Secondly, he says, by going to visit the chola, I'll be able to be ma'ayim b'dvarav. I'll look into it whether or not this person needs any assistance in any way, and by my being here, I will be able to assist them. So, that's the way the Tur explains it. The Beis Yosef there quotes in the name of the Ramban, the same idea, that when doing the mitzvah bikur cholim, one is supposed to offer a tefillah, and the Ramban ends off his words as follows. Hilkach, hamevaker es hachole velo bikesh alav rachamim. If somebody does the mitzvah bikur cholim, you take out of your schedule, you drive to the hospital, you go visit the patient, you go upstairs and you spend an hour and a half with them and you take care of everything they need, but you did not offer a tefillah before you left, lo kiyem mitzvah zu, says the Ramban. It's as if you have not fulfilled the mitzvah of bikur cholim. That is a startling comment. I would venture to say most people who go to visit a chola do not offer a tefillah. Now maybe we do incidentally. On our way out we say, I wish you a refuah shlema. That means you're offering a tefillah. But none of us really think about that. But the primary focus is that we should offer a tefillah when we go to visit a chola. The Gemara Maseches Nedarim Daf Mem. It's very interesting. The Gemara Nedarim is talking about when I take upon myself that I'm not going to eat potato chips. I take upon myself I'm not going to eat this. I'm not going to eat that. Or something is prohibited from my usage or someone else is prohibited from using my items. That's what the whole Masechta is about. What exactly are the parameters of taking a nether upon oneself? Or making something prohibited for somebody else to use. How does it work? What are the mechanics? So there in the context of that discussion, the Gemara says, what happens if I take a nether that I am never allowed to derive benefit from you? Or I say, you are never allowed to derive benefit from me as people, not my items. I don't say you're not allowed to use my phone. You can't use anything that belongs to me. I say, I'm not going to derive benefit from you. So the Gemara says, how much is included in such a nether? Would that now prohibit me from visiting the person who I took a nether against? That person is now sick. Am I allowed to visit them in the hospital, or would you say, no, I said I'm never going to derive benefit from you, you can't derive benefit from me, and this would be a violation of that. So that's why it's in the Gemara Maseches Nedarim Daf Mem. And in the context of that conversation, in the Gemara raises a very fascinating issue. The Gemara tells us exactly when we are allowed to visit a patient during the day. Anyone familiar with this? The Gemara says you shouldn't visit the patient within the first 3 hours of the day, and you should also not visit the patient the last 3 hours of the day. Why not? So this is a very interesting halacha. And the Aruch HaShulchan gives a reason why today we may not be so careful about this, but the Shulchan Aruch does quote it in Siman Shin Lamed Hei, in Yerodeya, that we're not supposed to visit a patient in the first 3 hours or in the last 3 hours. Why not? Explains the Gemara as follows. The first 3 hours of the day when the person had a great night's sleep and they're feeling really well. So you walk into the room and you see that they're in a very good spirit, they're in a very good mood, and their complexion is back, and they're not weak, and they're well rested. Says the Gemara, you're not going to offer a tefillah for them because you don't think they're so sick. They look great. In the last 3 hours of the day, somebody is so exhausted from being in the hospital or from being that patient and being sick all day, the last 3 hours of the day, they look worse than they actually feel. They're so exhausted. And therefore, you're not going to offer a tefillah because you think they're going to die. Because you think there's no hope for them to get better. They look worse than they actually feel. And therefore, the Gemara says you have to come sometime in the middle of the day where you get an accurate read of where the patient is holding and you'll be able to properly offer a tefillah. And that's an amazing comment. Meaning, what defines and dictates how you are to observe the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim is based on what is the best chance that you're going to offer an appropriate tefillah on behalf of that cholim. And that's where the Gemara tells us, that's where this comes from. So take, for example, let's say you have a chola mishutak, which means somebody who is a vegetable, somebody who is unresponsive, somebody who is not able to communicate at this point. Would you say that there's any value in visiting that person? Or do you say, look, they're under the care of the hospital and, you know, the hospital is doing their best job to take care of them, or the nursing home or the aide or wherever it may be. I'm not going to talk to them anyway. Is there any reason to visit? And the Acharonim say yes. Why is there a reason to visit? Because I'm still able to offer a tefillah. When I go, I will offer some tefillah on their behalf. So there's a major discussion in the Igros Moshe. Rav Moshe Feinstein and the Minchas Yitzchak, who was Diane Weiss from the Eidah Haredus, they talk about what is the halacha about being mevaker chola by calling on the phone? Or by, I would say today, by texting. Is there any value in texting someone and say, you know, I heard you're not feeling well, I just wanted to wish you well. Does that help for the fulfillment of the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim? Or would you say, no, that's a cop-out, that doesn't do anything. So Rav Moshe writes as follows. Rav Moshe says, Hine pashut l'anias daiti, she'af she'mekayim ha-mitzvah shal Bikur Cholim, even though it's true, by texting or by calling, of course you're making the person feel good that they're being thought about, that they're being considered. Aval lo yatza l'gamri yedei chovasa. Says Rav Moshe, you certainly are not in fulfillment of the complete package of Bikur Cholim. Number one, says Rav Moshe, if you go to the patient's bedside and you see that the room is a wreck and you see that the sheets have not been cleaned and you see that they don't have enough food and you see they don't have the right drinks there, then of course you're going to be able to help them out. By being there over the phone with them, you're not going to get an accurate read of the whole context of everything that's going on, and therefore you're limiting yourself in the ability to help this patient. That's number one. Number two, says Rav Moshe, when I offer a tefillah in the presence of a chole, there is something very unique about that tefillah. After all, the Gemara says, Shechina lemala mirashosav shel hachole. There's an assumption that the Shechina resides over the bedside of a chole. What exactly that means, I don't know. Why that's the case, I'm not exactly sure. But the Gemara assumes that the Shechina is there by the bedside of a chole. It's because of that, my father often points out, sometimes you're going to be mevaker chole by someone, and you're going to run out, you're going to say, oh, it's 5 minutes left to Shkia, I got to make it to Shul, I have to run to the minyan. So it's not appropriate to do that. Why? Two reasons. Number one, if you have a mitzvah that you're already engaged in, so we don't tell you to ignore the mitzvah that you're already doing to go fulfill a different one. If you're already engaged in the mitzvah Bikur Cholim, then do the mitzvah Bikur Cholim and go to shul later. Ah, you're going to miss the shkia? Okay, I'm an honest. What can I do? I'm doing the mitzvah Bikur Cholim right now. It's not appropriate to stop what I'm doing and to ignore this mitzvah in order to fulfill a different one. That's number one. But number two, and more fundamentally, why would we daven in a shul? It's in order that I should have the opportunity and the ability to have my tefillos answered quicker. Because when I daven together with the tzibur, and I daven in a beis hakneses, I have a better chance of my tefillah being answered. But if the Shechina is lamala mirashos of shelachole, if the Shechina is here in the room, then why go to shul? I already have the maila of tefillah and a beis hakneses here. And therefore it would be appropriate, perhaps, to stay. Now, of course, if I've been there already long enough in the hospital and I can leave anyway, so then why not go to shul and daven with a minyan? But there's no reason to rush out because the Gemara assumes that we have this opportunity to daven in the presence of the Shechina when we come to visit a chole. Rav Moshe Feinstein then has another tshuva in a different volume of the Igros Moshe where he says, would this be the same when we talk about Nichum Avelim? The same way I can have a partial credit of Bikur Cholim by calling on the phone or by texting or sending an email, would that also mean that I have the ability to do Nichum Avelim by calling on the phone? Now, practically, I happen to find it extremely difficult when you have somebody who's sitting Shiva and then they start answering the phones and everyone around them is trying to figure out, are we supposed to leave? Are we supposed to stay? Should we be listening to the conversation? Maybe it's a private conversation. Maybe we should go out of the room. It's just, it makes the Shiva home very complicated. But leaving that factor aside, would I be in fulfillment of the mitzvah of Nichum Avelim? Rav Moshe discusses it. And he says, the truth is there are two aspects of Nichum Avelim. One reason to be Menachem Avel is to give comfort and to console the Avel, him or herself, who's sitting Shiva on the loss of a relative. And that potentially can be fulfilled by calling on the phone. You're still making them feel comforted by the fact that you're reaching out. But secondly, Rav Moshe says, the Gemara assumes that the mitzvah of Nicham Avelim gives some kind of comfort to the mace as well. And that is only if you actually go to the place where the person passed away. And that, says Rav Moshe, obviously will not be able to be fulfilled. So what happens? You're supposed to go to a chola, and you're supposed to offer a tefillah. As the Ramban says, if you leave the bedside of the chola, if you finish your visit, and you did not offer a tefillah, you have not been mekayim the mitzvah of bikur cholim. You have not fulfilled the mitzvah of visiting the sick. Now, what kind of tefillah am I supposed to offer? And this is a question that people don't often think about. What kind of tefillah am I supposed to offer? What should I daven for? This is a very, very difficult question. So the Gemara says very explicitly in Maseches Brachos that one is not allowed to be mispalel for a nes. One is not allowed to daven for a miracle. So if you have someone that you're visiting, and al pi derech hateva, of course, miracles happen. But al pi derech hateva, based on the prognosis, based on the understanding of the case, there is no natural way that this person will ever make a comeback. There's no way that they're ever going to rehabilitate. There's no way they're going to be healed. Of course, again, miracles happen. But based on derech hateva, this is not something that is anticipated. It is not appropriate to offer a tefillah that they should have a refuah shelema. It is not appropriate to add them into your cholim list in Rifa'enu, because that's asking for a miracle. So the Gemara says, say for example, somebody is pregnant, and the woman says, you know, I daven to Hashem that I should have a boy. I daven to Hashem that I should have a girl. Whatever, you have a hang-up. You want it to be this or that. Whatever the person wants. I daven that it should be twins. Says the Gemara, you're not allowed to daven for such a thing. Why? Because once you're in the pregnancy, it doesn't matter whether or not you went for a sonogram. Once you're in the pregnancy, it's already been determined whether it's going to be a boy or a girl, whether it's one or two. So it wouldn't make sense to then offer a tefillah. You know, I really wanted to have a girl. I really wanted to have a boy. It's not an appropriate thing to daven for. After all, it's already been decided, and it would be miraculous to then switch from being one gender to the other. And therefore, the Gemara assumes you're not allowed to daven for a miracle. So that's something we need to keep in mind. When praying, when davening for a chola, we should not be davening for a miracle. If this is something that is somewhat routine, and there are many ways for doctors to deal with this ailment, with this predicament, so then we daven that the person should have a refuah, and it should all be natural, and it should go based on the medical community's understanding of this case, and that, of course, would be a very appropriate tefillah. Let's think about a different scenario. You know, many people have asked, so if I have somebody who's at the end stages of life, and al pi derech hateva, there's no way they're going to turn around, so what should I daven for? I should just ignore it? So that's a very good question. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes that the right thing to daven for is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should have Rachmanis on this person. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu will decide what Rachmanis means. If Rachmanis means that there should be some kind of new treatment, a clinical trial that comes out that now is going to be relevant for this patient's treatment, then so be it. That's Rachmanis. I'm not davening for a miracle. I'm asking that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should simply have Rachmanis, should have mercy on this patient, should have mercy on this person and not allow them to suffer. If the Rachmanis is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should make them stop suffering and take away their life, then he knows best. That is the Rachmanis. But that's what Rav Shlomo Zalman writes is what I should daven for. So there's a very, very shocking comment of the Ran there in Maseches Nedarim. As we mentioned, Maseches Nedarim has a discussion on Daf Mem, Mem Aleph, about Bikur Cholim and some of the parameters of the mitzvah. So there, the Ran makes a very fascinating comment based on a story that's mentioned in the Gemara. And the Ran says there are times, seldom, but there are times, where a person has the right to offer a tefillah that the patient should actually die. Now, that's not because I hate the patient, and it's not because I'm uncomfortable with them being alive, but rather because they are in so much pain, because the patient is having so much anguish by the situation that they're in. At this point, the best thing for them would be to suffer no longer and to actually pass from this world. And the Ran is of the opinion that you're able to daven for such a thing. Aruch HaShulchan quotes it lahalacha. I know many people are very uncomfortable with that. Like, what does that mean? You're going to offer a tefillah that somebody should die? It's a strange thing to do. And the truth is, there are some Achronim who write that even if you have, even if you do paskin like this Ran, which some Achronim do, my father accepts it, even if you do paskin like that, and Rav Moshe Feinstein writes about it as well, it would probably not be appropriate for like a close family member to ask for such a thing. Like a husband whose wife is very sick, or vice versa, to say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please have mercy on my spouse and kill him. You know, it just doesn't sound very nice. So Rav Moshe said, I'm sorry, the Tzitz Eliezer writes, quoting other Achronim, that you have to be careful who offers such a tefillah. But in the end of the day, the Ran does say that sometimes it's appropriate to ask that a person's life should be terminated because we no longer want them to suffer. Now, that doesn't mean as a medical practitioner that you have a right to terminate someone's life. That is ritzicha. That would be something that, of course, is never allowed. I just got a shiloh this week, which was so painful but so fascinating. Somebody came to me and said they have a family member who's 102 years old, has very severe Parkinson's, is not able to do anything on their own and has full-time help, but their mind is totally clear, which is a tremendous bracha, but at the same time, such a klala. When you're used to having your own independence, when you're used to living your own life, and your mind is totally clear, and you're able to make decisions and think about things and have conversations that are understandable to other people, but now physically you have an ailment that precludes you from being able to function the way you normally do. So this 102-year-old said that she doesn't want to live anymore, and therefore she lives in a state where euthanasia is permissible, legally. And she was not asking the Shaila whether or not she's allowed to go ahead with the treatment. Of course, that is not permissible for one to ever allow themselves to be killed by a doctor, even if it's a mercy killing. That's not allowed. But the question that the family member asked was, we're not going to be able to stop our mother. Our mother made up her mind, this is what she wants, this is what she's doing. Apparently, in order to qualify for this euthanasia, you have to go for a psychiatric evaluation, and she's been through it already, and she's prepared to do it. And they give some kind of treatment, which then will slowly or quickly, I don't know exactly how it works, cause the person's demise. So obviously it's usur, obviously it's not permissible, obviously it's not allowed, and even if a person is suffering, you're not allowed to do such a thing, you can't be involved in ritzicha biyadayim, even if it's my own life. You'll ask yourself, why don't I have the right to make the decision, it's my life? The Radvaz says the answer is because hanefashos lihena, our bodies don't belong to us, we are the property of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're here on loan to do a job. So I don't have a right to decide that I'm going to do something to my body just because I decided it's the right thing to do. It has to be something that's within the confines of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to be done with my body, and that's very hard for me to know. So this family member asked me, would we be allowed to bury our mother in a Jewish cemetery? That was the question. And would we sit Shiva for our mother after she does this? Such a painful question. I know our shir is about Bikur Cholim, but just something to think about. These are real questions. And I think as doctors, you're sometimes going to be confronted with very, very complicated and difficult situations. I'm sure you're going to have non-Jewish patients who believe that the best course of action for some patient who's in the end stage of life is to pull the plug or to do something else that is not accepted al pi halacha by many, many of the contemporary poskim. It's something you need to think about before you get involved in these areas of medicine. How are you going to approach these subjects? What are you going to do? And I'm sure you're going to be confronted with this issue because so many practitioners are, unfortunately, and it's something that's a real reality. The Shulchan Aruch, in quoting a Gemara Maseches Nedarim, writes that even though we have somebody who's perhaps far more chashuv, far more prominent than somebody else, the assumption is that the gadol is holech etzel hakata. The assumption is that even if you're the leader of the generation, even if you are an extremely prominent person, you put your kavod aside and you lower yourself, so to speak. Obviously, it's not lowering, but I go even to a simple person to be mevaker chola, even if I think that I'm much greater than that person, that I'm much more prominent, that they don't deserve my attention. But if it's for the mitzvah bikur cholim, I should put everything else aside, and I should be willing to be forthcoming. And it's told that Rabbi Akiva Eger, every single day that he was a Rav in Posen, in Europe, every single day he would go to the members of the Kehillah and he would say, can you give me a list, a rishima, of all of the sick people in town? Because I want to visit them. He was the great Rabbi Akiva Eger. He had plenty of great things to do. But this is something that needs to be a primary responsibility for all of us, regardless of how great you think you are or how prominent a position you hold in the community. So the question is, when it comes to the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, although the Gemara says that one should forgo their honor in order to visit somebody who's far less prominent than they are, how does this jive with the Gemara that we have in Maseches Baba Metzia, The Gemara says in Bava Metzia, when you have a zakein ve'eino lefi chavodo, if I have somebody who finds an aveda, who finds a lost object in the street, but it would be embarrassing, it would be degrading to me to walk around the streets and knock on the doors and try to return this item. So do I have a mitzvah of hashavas aveda or not? The Gemara says zakein ve'eino lefi chavodo is pater. If I have a lost item and I would be embarrassed to walk around the streets knocking on the doors trying to find the owner, so then I'm not obligated to do it. I would not have a mitzvah of hashavas aveda. So the question is, if by hashavas aveda we find that that is the guiding principle, that if it's something that's beneath my dignity, I don't have to do it, why would the mitzvah of bikur cholim be different? Why would I say that when it comes to bikur cholim, even if it's way beneath my dignity, and this hospital is not a place where I belong, and it's not an appropriate place for someone of my stature to be, still I have to put everything else aside and go visit the patient? Why? This is a question that is asked by the Rishonim. And the answer that they give is, well, one of the answers they give is because one of the sources of the mitzvah bikur cholim is learned from HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. As we mentioned in the beginning of this year, Acharei Hashem Elokecha Teilechon, we have an obligation to follow, to emulate the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself obviously is much greater than any human being. You can be Avram Avinu who's sick, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is still greater than you. And yet, he lowered himself, Kavi Yachal. HaKadosh Baruch Hu lowered himself, put all of his dignity aside to go visit and take care of Avraham Avinu. And since one of the sources of the mitzvah bikur cholim is from that story in Chumash, therefore we can extrapolate from there that we too sometimes have to put our feelings aside and our positions aside and go out of our way to the point that we even need to lower our dignity to be able to help the patient who will be very, very appreciative of our visit. The Gemara says in Maseches Moed Katan that although we have a general halacha that any time somebody who is a nasi or a great Talmud Chacham walks into a room, you have to stand up for them. Says the Gemara, if you happen to be sick or you happen to be sitting Shiva, you do not have to stand up. You ever seen this at a Shiva house? Somebody very important walks in and the Avelim start standing up and then everyone gets awkward, nobody knows what to do. So the Gemara says, an Avel or a Chole do not have to get up. I actually recently went to visit someone in the hospital. They had a terrible accident, and they really wanted a visitor, so I came to see them. And it was a little bit of a surprise visit. I told them I would come that day, but I wasn't sure exactly when. Worked out of my schedule. I showed up at 11 o'clock, and this person was so uncomfortable. And he said, you know, he starts getting up from his bed, and then I was uncomfortable because what am I supposed to say? The next line in the Gemara is, if you have somebody who gets up, you shouldn't say shvu. You don't respond to them, no, stay where you are. Why not? The Levush explains the reason why is because it's basically like I'm saying, you know, you should stay in this bed forever. Shvu, like, I want you to stay in this position forever. I don't want you to ever get better and be rehabilitated and be able to stand upright like the rest of us. So it's not appropriate. The Levush says these two phrases are next to each other in the Gemara. The Chola doesn't have an obligation to stand up for a Talmud Chacham. And if they stand up for the Talmud Chacham should not respond by saying, no, stay where you are. Those two phrases are next to each other in the Gemara because they are connected to one another. But it's important to know that we do not have an obligation to stand up for a chole, to stand up for a Talmud Chacham when they come to visit a chole in the hospital. The Chafetz Chaim in his Sefer Avos Chesed goes into a lengthy discussion about how important it is to be involved in the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. And he says so often, he bemoans the fact that people really do not pay enough attention to the needs of a chole. People are not careful enough about this idea of how important it is for us to be involved in the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. We have the opportunity all the time, and I see I'm out of time for this year, but we have the opportunity all the time to be engaged in the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. It's an opportunity that we have to emulate HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's an opportunity that we have to lift the spirits of other people. It's an opportunity that we have to engage others who need our help and will be encouraged by our visit. But it's important for us to understand that like every mitzvah that we do, even though this is a mitzvah Shebein Adam L'Chaveiro, and very often a mitzvah Shebein Adam L'Chaveiro, we can use our intuition to understand what's the right and wrong thing to do, what's appropriate and what's not. The halacha does have guidelines, even when it comes to the mitzvah Bikur Cholim. There are times we're supposed to visit. There are appropriate things we're supposed to do when we're there. There's a tefillah that's supposed to be offered, what kind of tefillah it should be. There's a lot to learn and a lot to think about. And I think as a practitioner, you certainly are going to have the opportunity very often throughout your careers not only to treat your patients, which clearly is part of the mitzvah Bikur Cholim. Treating a patient is also part of the mitzvah Bikur Cholim. Why? Because when the Torah sets down the framework for what the mitzvah is, the Torah writes, we have to look out for all the needs of the chole, all the potential needs of the chole. Obviously, one of them is going to be giving them medication, giving them their needs medically, and making sure that all of them are taken care of to the best of our ability. So you have the opportunity, as practitioners, to be involved in the mitzvah bikur cholim, perhaps more prominently than anyone else. And it's a tremendous chus, and it's a great opportunity. There's a, you know, to me, I see medicine as a tremendously noble profession. And it's an opportunity that you have to spend every day of your lives helping people, rehabilitating them, giving them of your expertise, and being able to help them move forward with their lives and be able to be comfortable and healthy and lead happy lives together with their families after they're no longer in your care. So, Emet Hashem, you should all be matzliach. You should have many, many wonderful gatherings to talk about what HaKadosh Baruch Hu's expectations are of all of you. And there's so much to learn. There are many, many conflicts. I would say that I think it's